weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus. You won't know if you don't listen.
And hey, thank you so much for listening. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. It is Saturday, May 9th. I am live on Saturdays here at iHub Radio from 10 to noon. I thank you for joining me. Phone number here is 760-544-8255. Or you can email a question or comment to studio@ihubradio.com. I've been kind of interested this week in digging into how this whole virus thing became partisan. Because, I mean, aside from the fact that we have a president who says things like, well, Democrats don't want us to reopen the country, which is just pure BS. I've been interested in what is going on with these protests. I talked last week about the fact that they were being supported and organized by far-right PACs or individuals who strongly support ultra-conservative points of view and who support the president. Or at the very least, even if they don't support the president, they oppose liberals. And I get it that with a 14% unemployment rate, with so many millions of people having lost their jobs, a lot of them unable to even get unemployment because they can't even get through to the unemployment office in their state, with some people still not having received their stimulus money, and with that quickly running out, $1,200 does not go very far. But it interested me to kind of dig into, when did public health become partisan? When did it become part of what we know as the culture wars? You know, we've got somewhere between 25 and 30,000 new cases of virus every day. And we now have the highest number of known cases in the world. And it's expanding daily by somewhere between 2 and 4%. That's a lot. And yet, there's a real push to reopen. Partly because people just have cabin fever. Obviously, the president has cabin fever. My God, how horrible it would be to be cooped up in the White House. At least for Melania. But the New York Times did an analysis and found that 18 of the states that are reopening had an increase of average cases over the last couple of weeks. And 15 of those 18 states are led by Republican governors. Why would that make a difference? Three of the top five states where the virus is spreading the fastest, Texas, Georgia, and Ohio, have Republican governors, Republican-controlled legislatures, and all of them have moved rapidly to reopen. Now, there are a lot of other states that are reopening a little bit at a time, including California, but being much more circumspect and cautious about what they're allowing. In the Midwest and in the South, smaller towns and more rural areas are getting hit hard because the virus is soaring through nursing homes and meatpacking plants and prisons, which are often located in these smaller towns. And meanwhile, you see these yahoos carrying guns and demanding their freedom to infect other people. I was particularly upset by this Wisconsin judge whose name is, coincidentally, Patience Rogensack. She's being criticized appropriately for being what is being called an elitist. She said that meat packers who are getting the virus, they aren't like other people in the state. This is the Chief Justice of Wisconsin's State Supreme Court. And she said that the meat packers in Wisconsin who are getting the virus aren't regular folks like the other residents of her state. And for what it's worth, these are exactly the kinds of judges that Mitch McConnell is rushing to push through for confirmation while Donald Trump is still president. Just saying. In the Los Angeles Times, there was a very clever column written by a woman named Virginia Heffernan, and she said, if masks are for libs, I guess that means libs don't want to die. Yeah. More than 45 states, by tomorrow, by Mother's Day, more than 45 states will have at least begun to relax the restrictions on businesses or personal services or being able to go to a park. And they're hoping to lift the economies a little bit. But it's one thing to have as a goal to keep people healthy and, on the other hand, to keep people working. Those two should not be mutually exclusive. And yet, Americans are not stupid in general. Some of those people driving those trucks might be. More than two-thirds of Americans, 68%, in a poll from Pew Research Center, which is a very respectable polling company, 68% of Americans are concerned about their own states being reopened too quickly. Beside the fact that protesters have been in the streets for days demanding that the states allow businesses to reopen. Even the instruction to wear masks to control any spread, if you go to the market, if you go to a restaurant, if you go out in the park, even the instruction to wear masks has become a flashpoint. And in fact, it led to a killing in Michigan. And I love the idea that on one of the trucks that I saw in one of those parades, guy had written on the side of the truck, give me liberty or give me death. And my attitude was, well, yeah. The governor of Ohio, a Republican, worth noting. There was a video showing a protester that was totally in the face of a reporter in Columbus, Ohio. The reporter was wearing a face mask. And the reporter was asking this protester to please stay at least 6 feet away. And this guy was accusing the reporter of terrifying the general public. You know the company you work for is lying to the American people. And I've heard people without masks in a crowd close to everybody else during these protests saying out loud and screaming at a reporter, this is all made up. You're just trying to scare us. You just want to get rid of Trump. How stupid do people have to be to think that a worldwide pandemic was conjured up just to get rid of that one man? I have to take a great deal of show a great deal of respect for the Republican governor of Ohio, who said with regard to all these protesters, come after me. Don't go after a reporter wearing a mask and trying to do the right thing. You want to scream at somebody, come after me. Good for him. But these people who are deniers and conspiracy nuts and who somehow truly believe that this is all some big nefarious plot to take away their freedom. I don't know if you remember seeing this picture of this nurse who was standing up to the armed protesters in Arizona. And she just stood there and stood her ground with a mask on and with her scrubs on and totally just took a stand. And they were saying, oh, well, she's just a paid actor. She's just in costume. This is how irrational some people are. And I like to think that Darwinism ultimately will win out. Now, Chris Christie, the former governor of New Jersey, who is a strong supporter of the president, who doesn't always agree with everything the president does, but Chris Christie this past week compared the virus and the choices we have to make to World War II. And this is this week the 75th anniversary of VE Day, which was the end of the war in Europe. And in comparing the circumstances that we are going through right now as a result of the virus, he said it is similar to when the United States sent many Americans off to die for the benefit of other Americans and for the greater good. The implication being that during World War II, in order to protect freedom for the world, and to take a stand, finally, that our country was not going to allow Nazism to take over the world, we sent Americans off to die for the benefit of other Americans. He said we sacrificed those lives because what we were standing up for was the American way of life. So just for reality, right after Chris Christie made those comments, the president likened Americans to warriors. Remember when he said, we're all warriors. And what he means by that, seriously, the president is saying, some of us have to die to make sure the economy is going to be good for everyone else. Now, unfortunately, the warriors he's talking about are mostly seniors, poor people, people of color. Made me think I was wondering where one has to go to register as a conscientious objector to that war. Oh, for heaven's sake. It's almost impossible to describe this man's thinking about anything without just acknowledging up front that anything that Donald Trump says or does always must be understood in terms that always are involved with how he sees himself in whatever's going on. If he sees himself as winning, that's all he cares about. And in fact, I remember when he first came into office, when he said, I want to be seen as winning every day in the press.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
Okay, I want to share with you, you know, part of the problem, obviously we all understand that with this virus that nursing homes are huge areas of concern. Mostly older people, some of them already ill. If one person from outside came in and visited somebody and they were asymptomatic, they did not have symptoms, but they did have the virus, then it can easily spread like wildfire. If one person gets it, they infect everybody else. If one of the healthcare workers coming in from outside brings it in, I mean, these places are hotbeds for the kind of environment a virus would love. Now, wouldn't you think, especially given what's going on, that regulations affecting nursing homes would be tightened? Well, guess what? Welcome to the Trump era. Their goal is to get rid of regulations whenever possible, including they already loosened regulations in meat processing plants. Well, now the federal government is considering rolling back infection control requirements in nursing homes. This was a rule that was proposed last year by something called the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that would modify the amount of time an infection preventionist must devote to a facility from what was originally in the regulation. It said that a preventionist of infections must devote at least part-time to making sure that a nursing home was without infection. They want to change that to sufficient time, which lets the facility decide how much time should be spent making sure that infections are prevented. Meanwhile, more than 16,000 long-term care residents and staff have died of the virus. Nearly 97,000 residents and staff have tested positive. And this rule would allow facilities to determine for themselves how long was needed to prevent infections in their nursing homes. Are seniors now just considered expendable? Because we have to reopen the government, our economy. This idea that rolling back regulations in order to benefit business so that the economy numbers look good, regardless of those that have to be considered expendable, that is really disgusting. Now, there have been a lot of information and statistics out there about the fact that we're losing so many jobs. And there have been a lot of organizations and nonprofits and unions or organizations that represent certain professions that have been coming together to try and provide some support for people who have absolutely lost their jobs and may never get them back. So there was a $7 million fund, for example, for out-of-work bartenders. And the nation's most prominent industry organization for bartenders, something called the U.S. Bartenders Guild, which is affiliated with a foundation that has an emergency assistance program with a $7 million fund designed to aid professionals whose work has been disrupted in a time of crisis, specifically bartenders. They've only dispersed $1.5 million of that $7 million so far. And for some reason that they could not explain, 90% of bartenders who applied for help through that fund were being rejected. Which brings me back to this thing that I talked about a lot last week about the difference between the essentials and the expendables. For example, Hispanics are nearly twice as likely as whites to have lost their jobs as a result of the virus. 20% of Hispanic adults, 16% of blacks have been laid off or furloughed since this outbreak began, compared with only 11% of whites. More than 30 million claims for loss of jobs have been filed since March. In many of our states, more than a quarter of all workers are, in fact, unemployed. And I just want to remind you that after the recession that took place in 2008, that was turned around over time by Barack Obama, it took 10 years for us to come back from that recession. And this time around, it's women, minorities, low-wage workers. Those are the people who are being hurt the most right now. Women made up the biggest share of April's job losses. 55% of the job losses in April were jobs held by women.
Because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I want to talk about something that I haven't heard much talk about at all. And when I read this, this just frosted me. It turns out that some of the states that have very low virus case numbers, and in fact, very low populations, relatively speaking, got higher percent per capita amounts of money from the stimulus bills than other states did. So, for example, Alaska, Montana, and Wyoming are among the least populated states in the United States and have the lowest number of residents who've tested positively, which is not a surprise. They have fewer people. But they scored big when Congress pumped out that federal aid to the states. Among those states, along with some other small states, they took really a big proportion of the $150 billion in federal money that was designed to address virus-related expenses. So, for example, now Hawaii was one of those states. They have very low incidence right now, and they've been really strict about who can walk around and how to, and they haven't reopened yet. But in Hawaii, they got the equivalent of $2 million for every positive test. In Alaska, they got nearly $3.4 million per every positive test. In Wyoming, which is the smallest state with less than 600 positive cases, they received $1.25 billion, which came to about 80% of their annual state budget. By comparison, in New York and New Jersey, the hardest hit states, they got about $24,000 to $27,000 per positive test. Other states with high numbers of virus cases, Massachusetts, Michigan, Illinois, less than $100,000 per positive case. So lower population states often got higher dollar amounts when this money was doled out from Congress. Now, to be fair, even low population states have two senators, so they had a lot of influence. It's certainly an equal amount of influence of the senators in other states. But it does strike me that most of the states that got those larger amounts happen to have Republican governors. Here's another thing. I haven't seen much of anything about this. Tribal governments were supposed to get $8 billion in direct relief under that act that was passed, the Stimulus Act. And that bill was for $2 trillion. Tribal governments were supposed to get $8 billion. It's been more than a month since that bill passed. They haven't gotten any of it. Now, the Treasury Department, under Steve Mnuchin, which is charged with distributing that money, has apparently just been kind of screwing up when it comes to dealing with the tribes. The Treasury has no good reason not to be pushing that money immediately to the tribal governments who are struggling with the economic fallout and the number of cases that they have had to deal with on tribal lands, partly because they do not have the same facilities available to them that some of the bigger cities do. So there's been a lot of good things that I've been finding that have been said by people that, you know, might make a difference if we just were listening. There's a senator from Missouri, a young guy, 40 years old, the youngest senator. Josh Hawley is his name, Republican senator from Missouri, who has a very populist vision for what he believes the Republican Party should be after Donald Trump. He believes it should embrace some government. He criticizes big business and attacks what he calls a cosmopolitan elite that looks down on religion and has sold out the American working and middle classes to multinational corporations. He believes we should have a plan to cover 80% of wages for any worker at any business where they've been laid off, and give companies a bonus for rehiring workers who were laid off. This young Republican senator, Josh Hawley, says we have to be the champions of working folks, which I might add was a position that the Democratic Party always held for all the years I was growing up. The Democrats were the party of the working people, and the Republicans were the party of the rich. My, how times have changed. George W. Bush, great documentary that was on TV about George W. Bush. Didn't include everything, but it was some of the good stuff and some of the bad stuff, and very well done. George W. Bush came out with a public statement this past week, and he said, even at an appropriate social distance, we can find ways to be present in the lives of others to ease their anxiety and share their burdens. He said, let us remember how small our differences are in the face of this sheer threat. In the final analysis, we are not partisan combatants. We are human beings, equally vulnerable and equally wonderful in the sight of God. We rise or fall together. Let's remember that the suffering we experience as a nation does not fall evenly. In the days to come, it will be especially important to care in practical ways for the elderly, the ill, and the unemployed. President Trump smashed George Bush after that statement. Because how dare George W. Bush call that we should push partisanship aside? Because George Bush did not come out and support Donald Trump during impeachment. So why didn't he push for putting partisanship aside during impeachment? Donald Trump said he was nowhere to be found in speaking up against the greatest hoax in American history. That typical message we always hear from our president. It's about me. It's about me. It's about me. I've raised kids. The me stage is at about 5 or 6 years old. So 2020 election is coming up, and obviously everything is going to be partisan. Tara Reid, the woman who has accused Joe Biden of a sexual assault that anyone who knows Joe Biden seems to find really hard to believe. Yes, he's a touchy-feely guy, but the idea that he would do the kind of thing that Donald Trump boasted of being able to do just strikes a lot of people as, whoa. Nevertheless, Tara Reid, the woman who is accusing him of having sexually assaulted her, not just sexually harassed her, but sexually assaulted her 27 years ago, and who claims to have filed a report with the Senate Personnel Office, she's now saying, well, I don't think I explicitly accused him of either sexual assault or sexual harassment. So she's kind of changing her story now. She said the main word I think I used, was uncomfortable, that he made me uncomfortable, and that I thought I was being retaliated against. Meanwhile, the Senate Personnel Office says privacy is an issue and they will not look for or release whatever she may have filed. And nobody on Joe Biden's staff at the time can remember anything having been filed that took him to task for the way he had treated Tara Reid. So I'm interested in, you know, I'm always interested in the dichotomy, in the kind of perhaps hypocrisy. The Republicans are saying, well, where are the Democrats in their strong support for always believing women? Well, for what it's worth, women should be heard. Women should be taken seriously. That doesn't mean they should be believed, but they should be taken seriously when they make an accusation like that, and an investigation should be done. The Republicans keep bringing up, well, the way the Democrats treated Brett Kavanaugh when he was up there for appointment to the Supreme Court. And all I can say is, if Republicans and conservatives in general were outraged by the treatment of Brett Kavanaugh, why on earth would they now be duplicating the behavior that outraged them to begin with? In other words, if just assuming that what any one individual might say about sexual harassment or sexual assault regarding someone in a high potential position, like president or Supreme Court justice, if we should not automatically be believing what that person said, well, then why would you now automatically be believing Tara Reid? I mean, seriously. It should be taken seriously on both sides. That doesn't mean it has to be believed, but it should be taken seriously and investigated. And that's what they are doing right now. And I had to laugh when Donald Trump said, well, I really hope that they find that the accusations against Joe Biden aren't true. Sure, because he's got how many now who are claiming that he not only sexually harassed them, but sexually assaulted them in very credible recitations and in numbers that begin to get ridiculous. And after the president himself said, you know, he grabs women in private parts because they let him, because, you know, when you're a celebrity, you can get away with it. So the big question now is, in 2020's election, will the Democrats keep the House and can they take the Senate, regardless of who ends up in the White House? If the Democrats take the Senate, they can at least slow down this push for the most conservative, obnoxious justices and judges at the federal bench. And they can hold back on some of the changes that Donald Trump, if he is reelected, wants to make with regard to who he appoints to certain offices. The Democrats have very strong candidate recruitment. They're raising money. And Trump's approval ratings are declining. There's hope. Don't give up hope, ever. This is Anita Rufus, the Lovable Liberal. And you are listening to iHub Radio.
because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I want to run down a few other things that you ought to at least be aware of. The Supreme Court, in their on-telephone line hearings this past week, one of the cases that they were hearing information about was whether or not contraception should have to be covered in health plans. Now, of course, I said basic birth control should be free. But nevertheless, the case that's in front of them is part of coverage that was mandated by Obamacare. So whether employers should have to provide health insurance to cover birth control for women. And some religious exemptions have been made for churches not to have to put that coverage, for example, Catholic Church, in their health insurance for their employees. But then you ask, well, what if their employees aren't Catholic? Good question. So we'll see what the Supreme Court comes back with on that. Sexual harassment rules in colleges, Betsy DeVos is rewriting those. Because after all, if you're part of the Trump administration, you got to get rid of regulations as much as possible. The new rules for sexual harassment would change the guidelines that were put in place by the Obama administration, which included a tighter definition of sexual misconduct. Betsy DeVos says, we need to restore fairness and rebalance the rights of the accuser with the rights of the accused. And that includes that one of the things that was part of the guidelines put in by Obama's administration is that investigations that are done on a college campus do not require that the accuser have to face the accused. That whatever the committee is in that college can call in the accuser and get her story. They can call in the accused and get his story. But that they didn't have to face each other in those circumstances. That's what Betsy DeVos wants to change. The guidelines required that the sexual conduct be severe or pervasive, not both. Betsy DeVos is going to change that. And, you know, a one-time instance of a student forcing someone else to touch them sexually would no longer be prohibited. Hey, if it only mattered, if it only happened once, I mean, come on. The case about the horrible murder of Ahmaud Arbery, 25 years old, in Georgia. This was where a guy was jogging in his mother's neighborhood. And a white father and son picked up their guns, got in a truck, and went after this guy because they figured he was the one who had been burglarizing their neighborhood. After all, he was running and he was black. They chased him in a pickup, spotted him, confronted him, and ended up killing him. Well, originally, the authorities said, the local authorities said, hey, if you think you're chasing down a criminal, you have the right to do that. And, you know, having a gun to protect yourself because you wouldn't know if that criminal might be armed. And my question is, well, did they call 911 to alert the police while they were in the truck chasing after this guy? Apparently not. Meanwhile, 2 months after the local authorities refused to bring charges, the state has now arrested the father and son. No bail. World Press Freedom Day was last Sunday, and there were celebrations all around the world. UNESCO, in particular, the United Nations organization, launched a global campaign on media and social media with a focus on journalism without fear or favor. We have a real problem in this country because we have a president who claims that journalism is fake news unless it's being nice to him. Then it's okay. And he's even upset with Fox News because, after all, how dare they occasionally take a position that doesn't make him feel good. Speaking of news, I want to encourage you on YouTube. There is a continuing program that is being run by actor John Krasinski. He's done a lot of good roles, and one of them was his breakout role was on The Office, and he was terrific. And he's done a lot of movies now. Well, John Krasinski, during this separation period as a result of the virus, he's running a show on YouTube called Some Good News. And it is really good. It's really clever. It is some really good news. It's funny. And it is worth watching. So I strongly encourage you to find Some Good News on YouTube. Warren Buffett, who is one of those guys that is worth listening to, he said, with regard to what's going on around the virus and the task force, he said, personally, I feel extraordinarily good about being able to listen to Dr. Anthony Fauci, whom I had never heard of a year ago. I think we're very, very fortunate as a country to have somebody who at 79 years of age appears to be able to work 24 hours a day and keep a good humor about him and communicate in a very, very straightforward manner about fairly complex subjects and tell you when he knows something and when he doesn't know something. Buffett went on to say, I do feel I owe a huge debt of gratitude to Dr. Fauci for educating and informing me, along with my friend Bill Gates, too. And I know I'm getting it from a straight shooter when I get it from either one of those. I put an item up on Facebook this past week. The thing about the killer hornets, the murder hornets, I put up on Facebook, maybe it's time for us to smear some blood over our front door. You know, we just got through having Passover, and that was one of the whole meaning of the word Passover is when the angel of death would pass over the homes of the good Jews and protect them from having their oldest born sons killed when all the plagues were taking place. That was the last of the big plagues. And Passover meant if the blood of a lamb was seen outside the front door of a house, the angel of death knew to pass over it. Killer hornets, what can I say? Finally, Stephen Colbert, in comparing Donald Trump to Lincoln, when Trump did his thing in front of the Lincoln Memorial and compared himself to Abe Lincoln, Colbert said, hey, wait a minute. You did not have Abe Lincoln supporters carrying Confederate flags. Give me a break. This is Anita Rufus. You can be a diamond in a rhinestone world.